What else else to say? Well, hello and welcome to Cinema Shock.
Yeah,
special members only current release episode.
It's not members only release. It's members only to vote.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I'll just say in a very special current release episode, something like that.
Just say bonus episode.
All right.
We'll explain from there. We should leave all this in. What are we going to call this?
I didn't even realize it was recording right now, so that's even better.
Okay, it is.
Well, that's the intro. Welcome to Cinema Shock, where we don't normally talk about new movies, but now we are. Here we go.
Well, hello. That's Gary Horn. I'm Justin Bishop. Have we officially started the show? Is this it? Is this officially?
Yeah, this is
we're rolling. Okay. I'm Justin Bishop.
Start with more excitement than that.
That's Gary Horn over there. Welcome to Cinema Shock. Like Gary said, we're talking about a new release on this one. So if you are a member of Cinema Shock Plus, first of all, this is not something we normally do, right? We don't normally talk about new releases. We've done it a few times over the years here and there. But last summer, me and Gary and Todd all went to see Superman and decided we wanted to do a little bonus episode about that. We released that. We think you guys enjoyed that. And then we did the same thing a few weeks later with Fantastic Four. Did a little bonus episode. Obviously not big deep dive like we do on our regular episodes, but we had fun doing those. And we see a lot of new release movies, so we figured why not let you guys know what we think about them. And not only that, but it gave us an opportunity to give one more perk to our Cinema Shock Plus subscribers. So if you're a member of Cinema Shock Plus, you got a notification a few weeks ago that you got to vote in a poll to help us pick out a movie that was being released in December that you wanted us to review. We gave you a few options, and the choices were, what were they, Gary? That was the Silent Night, Deadly Night remake.
Mm-hmm.
It was The Housemaid, which is the one starring Sydney Sweeney and Amanda Seyfried. And then it was Anaconda 2025 starring Paul Rudd and Jack Black. Now, of those three movies, Gary, which one were you hoping our listeners
would I wanted an excuse for? To go look at Amanda Seyfried and Sydney Sweeney. Why do I sound like a horny teenager all the time?
I think it's just because of the way you phrased it, honestly.
Yeah. So I'm interested in The Housemaid probably most of all, if I'm being I don't know, because I do want to see that Silent Night, Deadly Night remake too.
I've heard it's pretty fun.
Yeah,
it's got what's his name from the last Halloween movie in it.
Yeah, I will say this honestly, I am surprised that Anaconda won, sort of.
Yeah,
and out of those three, if I'm being real with you, and it's no judgment, I wanted to see all of them. But if I had to rank them, I bet Anaconda would have been last on my ranking on which one I would have.
Of like your priority of which ones to go see.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I also wanted to see all of them. I mean, we put them all on the list because they were all movies that we were interested in. But I was also like really sort of hoping The Housemaid would win. Partially because I think Paul Feig, who directed that movie, is a good director, and I think he's really good at that type of movie. He did that one with Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. Do you remember that one? What was the name of it? And then they did a sequel to it like this year, I think. But really good. But he also did like Bridesmaids. He's done a lot of really good stuff. And I also just really love that genre of movie, like that, like sort of domestic thriller, erotic thriller. Not that that one's an erotic thriller, but it is a domestic thriller. Like a Hand the Rock's the Cradle, like that 90s, like kind of like slightly trashy, but still sort of respectable, like mid budget thriller. I love that genre. It's literally like, I would call it one of my favorite subgenres of movies. I just, it's like catnip to me, and I love it. So that movie definitely looks like it fits well within that category, you know?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. And it was A Simple Favor was the name of that movie.
Yeah, that was it. That was good. That was a good movie.
It was a fun movie. So
I
probably appealed to me more right this second. And the Silent Night, Deadly Night, just for the trashiness of it all.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that just
seemed although I'm not sure it even played here, so I think if it would have won, we would have been kind of screwed on that, because I don't know that it, I never saw it playing anywhere around here. I might be wrong, but I definitely didn't see it. But I mean, Anaconda looked fun because it's like, it's Jack Black and it's Paul Rudd, and I love those guys, and I love the idea that this movie existed, because on paper it sounds like such a weird, dumb idea that you're like, sort of, I was sort of shocked. Even reading about it for like months ahead of time, like I remember them announcing it and stuff, I still didn't really believe that it was happening until I saw a trailer come out, and I was like, oh wow, they actually did that idea for a movie, which is not a sequel to Anaconda, but and not a reboot, but a meta sequel that is about these guys who grew up watching the original Anaconda and loved it so much that they decide in their adulthood, these guys are like in their 50s now, that they're going to make their own reboot of Anaconda. So in the world of Anaconda 2025, Anaconda 97 is a movie that these characters watched. So it's not your typical sequel. It's just it's weird. I don't even know what to call it. I guess it's in the franchise, but it's also outside of the franchise.
Well, I mean, it treats Anaconda like it's an actual movie. So I mean, it's franchise adjacent, I guess.
Yeah. So the Anaconda franchise, what's your history with the Anaconda franchise? You told me last night when we went to see this that you had recently watched the original one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, within the past year, I watched Anaconda. Yeah. I don't know exactly how long ago, but was very curious about it. And it came up in a little movie night thing the wife and I do. So I was
happy. But you had seen it before.
Yeah, it made it so that I felt like it had been recent enough. I remember it pretty well and didn't need to refresh going into this one.
But did you see it back in the 90s?
Yeah, I think I can't remember specifically, but I want to say I would have seen this in the theater. But like I remember when it was out, like as a new release.
Yeah, I think I saw it in the theater too. I know I saw it multiple times back in the day. This was like one of those that I rented on VHS from Blockbuster or wherever I was getting movies at the time. And I loved it back then because, I mean, what's not to love about it? It's ridiculous. And I rewatched it a few nights ago because it had been probably 20 years since I last saw it. So I wanted to have it fresh on the brain just in case there were any like references and stuff in this movie, which there are, but it's mostly, it's not, no like deep references, no like deep, like inside, like wink at you sort of thing. It's because again, within the world of this movie, that movie exists. So when people talk about it, they're just talking about like scenes from the movie that actually there's no like clever references that are like fan, like, you know, like when you put in like those like fan, like where you're putting these little trinkets in the movie for fans to go like, oh, I know what that's referencing. It's not, it doesn't really do that. It's just like, oh yeah, remember when Owen Wilson did this?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is like, you know, I think you could classify Anaconda as a cult classic at this point. And so this movie is giving it love in that way, but I don't look at it as like a cult classic. It's, I feel like I reference like Halloween or something too much, but Halloween's this thing that like launched a bunch of sequels, and then there are like little blink if you miss it, like nods to it that are just for the super fans. Like if they wear the Halloween 3 masks, like walking in the background or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like that kind of thing. You don't get that with Anaconda. Necessarily. Well, anything that's even remotely like that, they like tell you.
Yeah,
you know, they
say make fun of John Voight's accent, which is not like, that's not a wink at the audience. That's just making fun of John Voight's accent because we've all seen Anaconda. Now it's funny you mentioned the sequels to Anaconda to Halloween, because Anaconda 97. I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole this morning because I knew it had at least one sequel. I knew about the first sequel, not knowing that there was an entire franchise spawned from this movie. So the original Anaconda came out in 1997. It was directed by Luis Losa, who directed Sniper and The Specialist, both of which are fun, if sort of trashy B movies. Have you seen those? You know, Sniper, Tom Berenger, and
it was just like popping into my head right as you said Tom Berenger. Like I pictured the cover of it.
Yeah, and it's got a bunch of sequels too, like a bunch of direct-to-video sequels. And then The Specialist is, that one was a big deal back in the day because it paired up Sylvester Stallone and Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone, yeah. I definitely remember that one. I couldn't tell you a thing about Sniper except the cover of it, apparently, and that it had
Richard, but I know. I mean, I rented it back in the day, but I don't really remember anything about it. But those were kind of the movies he was known for prior to Anaconda. And of course, Anaconda stars, we mentioned Owen Wilson, John Voight doing the weirdest fucking accent of all time. And the thing he does with his face, like that grimace, that sort of weird frown thing he does.
Almost De Niro, but not quite De Niro.
Almost. You've got Jennifer Lopez. You've got Eric Stoltz. You've got Ice Cube. And you've got one of my teenage crushes, Carrie Wuerer, in this, who was in Sliders. That's what I knew her from. She's in a bunch of stuff. But I was a devotee of Sliders back in the day. And she had a pretty big role on there for multiple seasons. Did you ever watch Sliders?
I never did watch that show, no.
Man, I was obsessed with it. It's like Jerry O'Connell and John Rhys-Davies. It was great. About these guys that, like, they had this wormhole, like, machine that allowed them to travel between alternate universes. So every episode, they slid into a different alternate universe, hoping to find their way back to their home universe. So it gave you all these... It gave you a lot of really good excuses to do, like, different versions of Earth kind of thing. It went on for like 5 seasons. Although I think the last couple seasons were like on Sci-Fi and not on Fox or wherever it originally debuted. Anyway, I'm on a tangent about Carrie Wuerer.
No, she was like one of those people that like you knew from the late 90s or I remember she was in like the Swamp Thing TV show.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, and she's in Eight-Legged Freaks with David Arquette.
Didn't she host a game show on MTV back in the day?
Why does that feel really familiar?
Like a game about video games or something like that?
That does feel like a thing she did, but I don't remember.
We probably should have done some research.
We could have researched.
Well, I guess we should say why, since we're doing this episode as sort of a quick, this is sort of our quick initial thoughts on this film. Like I said, we're not doing a big deep dive, so we haven't done a lot of research on this, and we're not going to like do a lot of editing on it. We're going to have to throw this out there pretty quickly, so you're going to hear a lot more ums and uhs and me and Gary kind of talking over each other probably more than you do on our regular episodes, because we want to get this out while the movie's still out in theaters, and so you can make a decision as to whether you want to go see it. And by the way, I found out that the show she hosted was called Remote Control.
That does. I vaguely remember that. Like, I remember the name. Also, she was in Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time. Oh. And she is the performer on a song there called Feel Like I'm Falling in Love.
Yeah, I think she did a whole, she had a whole like side career as a musician. She had a record contract and everything. But anyway, we're getting off base. We're talking about Anaconda, 97. It was nominated for 6 Razzie Awards, Gary. There were Golden Raspberry Awards, which I think are bullshit, but still worth noting that somebody out there thought this movie was bad enough to warrant 6 nominations. It was nominated for Worst Picture, which it lost to The Postman. Worst Actor for John Voight, which lost to Kevin Costner in The Postman. Worst Director for Luis Losa, who lost to Kevin Costner in The Postman. And Worst Screenplay, which lost to, guess what, Gary? The Postman.
The Postman.
Wow. A sweep at the Razzies that year.
The Razzies are kind of, you know, I just feel kind of weird about them anyway. But
I hate them. I think they're bullshit. And I think they're mean-spirited.
Yeah, it feels that way. And also, how can you... I don't know. I don't feel like you could put Anaconda in there. Like, yeah, that just doesn't seem fair. Like, what is it trying to do? You know?
Yeah. It accomplishes exactly what it's going for. None of those Razzies mattered because the movie, it also got nominated for a couple of Saturn Awards, and it was a big hit at the box office. It made $136 million worldwide. And as I mentioned before, because of that success, it spawned several sequels, the first of which came in 2005, so an 8-year gap between them. But in 2005, Anaconda Hunt for the Blood Orchids was released. That one was directed by Dwight H. Little, who directed Halloween 4.
That blows my mind.
That it was directed by Dwight Little?
Yeah, that just is just an interesting fact. I don't know.
Pretty random. One of the better Halloween sequels, I would say.
No, that's why I thought that. Although, I guess pretty much that guy was or has been a director for hire in general. But
yeah, you know. Yeah. Anaconda Hunt for the Blood Orchids was a decent box office success. It made $71 million at the box office, but it was the final Anaconda film to be released in theaters. It was followed in 2008 by Anaconda 3 Offspring, directed by someone named Don E. Fauntleroy, which is a fantastic name, starred David Hasselhoff, so you know it's quality, Crystal Allen, and John Rhys-Davies. And this one was released in July of 2008 on the Sci-Fi Network, the Sci-Fi Channel. I think it had already changed to just Sci-Fi by then. And
Donnie Fauntleroy, for the record, we're going to see him here, I guess. So he's mostly a cinematographer. Like, he was a cinematographer on Jeepers Creepers. And he was in the camera and electrical department and stuff like The Goonies and Terminator 2. So he's got like credentials there, like as far as like camera work.
But as a director, mostly like sci-fi originals.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. So he did Anaconda 3. They shot it back to back with the sequel, the fourth Anaconda movie, which is not called Anaconda 4. It's just called Anaconda Trail of Blood, which was also a sci-fi original released in 2009. So the following year, same cast and crew as the original one, as of course, since they shot them back to back, except no David Hasselhoff in the cast. Now, I haven't seen this movie, so I can just assume that he didn't make it out of Anaconda 3 alive, or they just couldn't afford to have him on for two movies. I don't know.
What if he just quit?
They just had to figure like he just doesn't show up and it's never explained. But like Crystal Allen and John Rhys-Davies are still there. He's like, this. I'm not doing another one of these.
I'm out of here, guys. Good luck with the next part.
And then that was the last Anaconda movie for 6 years. And in 2015, we had Lake Placid versus Anaconda, which I did not know existed. And yes, it is a crossover between the Lake Placid and Anaconda franchises. It serves as a direct sequel to both Anaconda Trail of Blood and Lake Placid, The Final Chapter, which was the fourth film in the Lake Placid series, which I also did not know was a multi-film series until just now.
I actually have seen some of the Lake Placid stuff, but they definitely... Yeah, and it's like Betty White's in, I want to say, the second one, and maybe even like the third one. But then you get to the fourth one being like it's more definitely straight to sci-fi. Sci-fi original.
Yeah. This one was also a sci-fi original, directed by A.B. Stone, who only has one other directing credit after this, none before this. But the cast includes nobody you've ever heard of, except Robert Englund, who's billed really, really low, which makes me think that it was just like a cameo. They got him for one day so they could have a little bit of horror clout and throw him in the trailer. That would be my guess. But maybe we'll have to watch all the Anaconda movies.
You've heard of Yancy Butler. She was in that like Witchblade series back in the day. Like when they tried.
I don't know that name.
Witchblade was, based off that comic book. That was like an image. Oh, yeah.
Was there a TV series?
Yeah, there was a TV series for a little bit. Like, I think it was,
I never saw it. I mean,
it went like a couple of seasons. And she's in, she's like the love interest, main chicken, Hard Target.
With Jean-Claude Van Damme? I love that movie. Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know her by name, but I do know her since you said Hard Target. I watched that not too long ago. I love that movie. Great movie.
Yeah, no, it's great. She's got that, like, she's got a pretty unique look. I mean, she's a good looking lady, but she's got like that voice that's kind of not what you expect, like kind of raspy.
A little bit.
I always say she's always stuck out to me for that, like her eyebrows and her raspy voice.
Well, I guess that is she the star of Lake Placid versus Anaconda? Is she pretty high billed on it?
Based on IMDb, yes. Nice. She is second billed. At least there.
Well,
as Reba, nobody has a last name except Robert Englund's character.
Well, Lake Placid versus Anaconda was the last Anaconda movie for a decade. until we got this new one, Anaconda 2025, which is simply just called Anaconda in the typical 2025 way of naming your sequels. We're just going to make it confusing. Is it a remake? Is it a reboot? No one will know if we just call it by the same name. I hate this naming convention. Like Halloween 2018. It's very confusing. It's a sequel, but they just called it Halloween. And it's, I don't know. I find that very annoying. But this new one was directed by Tom Gormican, who had directed The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is another like very meta movie, right? Where like Nicolas Cage plays himself in the movie and Pedro Pascal plays someone who's not Pedro Pascal. Did you ever see that one?
I did. I thought that was a fun movie. Yeah.
Pretty good. I haven't seen it. I heard it was pretty fun.
Apparently I lied about Betty White being back in the Anaconda movies. I just looked at it. Sorry.
The Lake Placid.
Since you made me pull up IMDb. Yeah. So, in the Lake Placid movies, Betty White doesn't seem to have come back. But Yancey Butler seems to be in a lot of them. So she appears to be an ongoing character in that series.
Oh, okay. All right. So it is a direct sequel. Oh, interesting. Well, anyway, we went off track. We're talking about 2025 now. So this new one was directed by Tom Gormican, written by Gormican and Kevin Etten, who also co-wrote The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And we've got a pretty stacked cast here. I mean, we've got, we mentioned Paul Rudd and Jack Black. Obviously, they're kind of the selling point of this. But Steve Zahn is in it. Thandie Newton. Daniela Melchior, who was in like Guardians of the Galaxy, the second one, I think she was in the second one. And then Selton Mello, who's very funny in this. But we're going to get into our thoughts on this real quick. We're not going to, like I said, we're not going to deep dive into this. This is just sort of me and Gary talking about our real time reaction. Cause we went to see this last night, like less than 24 hours ago, we were in a theater, watching this opening weekend on the big screen in a packed theater too. I mean, it was full. It was pretty full in there. Granted, it's the weekend after Christmas and everything. So Gary, initial thoughts on this movie. What'd you think? Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I thought it was funny. I think your wife made it funnier for me.
She was having a ball. I mean, she is a massive Jack Black fan, for one thing. Like, she is a huge Jack Black fan. He is like her absolute favorite. She'll watch anything with Jack Black in it. And Paul Rudd, honestly. She's a big Paul Rudd fan too, but especially
Jack. My wife was interested for Paul Rudd, but she loves him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, your wife was very into all the jokes and in it. I think just for some reason, when you watch a comedy with like people that are having fun, I guess probably any movie with other people that are having lots of fun doing it, it like makes it more memorable for you.
Well, it heightens the experience. And I was actually telling Bunny this as we were leaving last night, because there's something about seeing a comedy, especially in a movie theater. But this is one reason that I'm always very adamant about trying, about how important it is to see movies in a theater, because movie going, there's nothing wrong with watching movies at home and stuff, but movie going reaches a different level when it is a communal experience. It's why I think the theatrical experience is so important, because like if I had watched Anaconda at home, I would have chuckled at it quite a few times. You know, it's very funny. But when everyone else in the theater was laughing and everyone in that theater was laughing, I mean, yeah, Bunny was cracking up, but like there were people behind us who were like cracking up just as much. Like the whole theater was laughing at the jokes, and it becomes sort of infectious, and it gives you a different experience to where things that you might have chuckled at home, like you might be laughing out loud when you're in the theater, because that joy that everyone else is feeling during those moments, it kind of gets to you, and it becomes it really enhances the experience. I felt the same thing back when I saw the Naked Gun reboot earlier this year. That like, I think it's a very funny movie. And when I watch it at home, I will still think it's very funny. But watching it in a theater full of people who are all just dying laughing at it is a better experience. I think comedy and horror more than anything, that's true. Because like when people get scared in a horror movie, it enhances it to me. It makes it a better viewing experience, because you're seeing in real time people react to something that none of you have ever seen before. If it's a new movie,
I've never thought Napoleon Dynamite was as funny as the first time I ever saw it, like on a midnight screening, you know?
Yeah.
It just exactly. It felt like a concert or like something. It was, everybody was going nuts, and like the dance sequence, like people were standing and cheering for that. And so
I never
felt as good as that.
I remember having that experience with there's Something About Mary the first time I saw it. Thinking it was the funniest movie I'd ever seen because everyone in that theater was dying. It's like in the scene where he's got the jizz hanging from his ear and like everyone was dying. And I just thought it was like the height of comedy. I still think that movie's funny, but definitely not as funny as I thought it was then. I remember seeing My Big Fat Greek Wedding of all things and having that same experience because here in Greenville, South Carolina, where we live, there's a very large, Greek population. There's a lot of Greek people here. And that theater, when I saw My Big Fat Greek Wedding, was filled with Greek people who all related to what was going on screen. So it was even funnier to them because they related to everything that was going on. And that made the experience for me even better. And I've watched that movie multiple times over the years, and I've always felt it was you know, pretty charming. But that first time I saw it, like, I was dying laughing because all these other people around me were. And I felt like I had that experience with Anaconda as well, where like I will rewatch it and I will probably laugh at it, but will it be the same as it was when I saw it yesterday in a theater full of other people who were laughing at it? Like, probably not.
Right. Yeah. I don't think so. So going back to Anaconda, which we're here to talk about, I thought that it was good. I think that if I was trying to be objective about it, I would say that I didn't think it went as far as it could have gone. And
with like the meta stuff or like,
maybe because I think straight in my head, what I compare it to is like Tropic Thunder. And so I don't, you know, like just thinking about that, I just feel like Tropic Thunder was edgier and a little bit, and I don't mean like it's got to be just perverse or like just, I don't know, mean necessarily or something, but it just felt like if you think of Tropic Thunder and how far it pushes, like it tears apart Hollywood a little bit more. It's just, I don't know. Anaconda felt a little tame to me.
Yeah. It's got a little, there are moments that feel like it's trying to be a little family friendly in a way, which is weird for a movie about a giant killer snake. But, you know, you've got Jack Black in there who, oddly enough, even though he became famous for like being super filthy with Tenacious D, now he's kind of become like the family movie guy. Right. I mean, he drops an F-bomb in it. There's language in it. He drops a very funny F-bomb actually in the movie. That's one of the best laughs in the movie. But I feel like almost like when they were making this movie, they had to keep that in mind that kids who like Jack Black from like the Minecraft movie and like the Jumanji movies and stuff would be coming to see this, and they couldn't quite go that far with it. So I see what you mean. There could be a little more like edge to it. And like the story, I felt like the story's pretty like meh. Like the story is very cookie cutter, very sort of a lot of conveniences, but if you put that aside and watching just Paul Rudd and Jack Black and Steve Zahn do what they do best is enough reason to get in the theater. I think
the chemistry is there with all those people. Like, as far as you know what they're capable of, and they are funny. They're the reason the movie is all right. You know,
right.
is because of their chops and their chemistry together. I will say I was happy with that. Oh, it is still a monster movie, and the snake is played for tension. Like, there's still good like horror elements, like when the monster is involved and stuff.
There are. I mean, I felt like until the last act, the snake wasn't in it quite enough. But there are some really good scenes with the snake. Like the early one on the boat is really good, even though it's kind of a short little tease. But then the one where they're trying to start the car, like that one's really good. And I'm trying to be vague on this because we're trying not to get into spoilers right now. We might get into spoilers later on, and we'll let you know. But there's one where they're trying to start the car that you get a little glimpse of in the trailer. But that scene was like legitimately pretty intense. and very funny, like at the same time, which is a hard thing to do, but it turned out pretty good. I did not know Steve Zahn was even in this movie, I don't think, before I forgot.
Yeah, I forgot until I saw him. And I've always loved Steve Zahn, and I don't know, I used to have this buddy named Jake who said if they ever made a movie about his life, and this was back in the early 2000s, but he was like, he always used to say he'd want Steve Zahn to play me. So I've always like loved Steve Zahn since then.
I feel like that might be an insult because Steve Zahn in every movie he's in, he just plays the dumbest guy in the room.
Probably is.
Steve Zahn plays that same character in almost everything. He was a little different in The Righteous Gemstones, but I rewatched Out of Sight recently, and he's definitely playing that same guy again. Like, he's just an idiot, but he's so good at it. And he is very much an idiot in this movie, and it's hilarious. He's so funny in this.
Yeah, he's something else in this one. And randomly during the movie, I was like, I don't think this is the first time I have seen Steve Zahn in a movie with like Jack Black. And I was trying to think of what it was. And I think it was Saving Silverman. I think they were both in Saving Silverman. and it made me remember that with like Jason Biggs when he was like still hot from like American Pie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that's a movie. I remember that is a movie.
And Paul Rudd and Jack Black, I think, have only been together in Walk Hard. I think that's the only thing they've done together where they played John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Remember that?
Were they both in Anchorman?
Is Jack Black in Anchorman?
Jack Black in Anchorman. I can't.
If he is, it would only be in one of those like fight scenes with the other news guys. But I don't think Jack Black's in those scenes. You have to look that up for me. I don't think he is though. But they,
it does say Jack Black. Oh, he plays a motorcyclist.
Okay. I wonder if they have any scenes together. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that they would. But
they're great in that cameo in Walk Hard though, which is one of my favorite comedies of all time. I love that movie. But Thandie Newton in this was kind of surprising to me because you don't really see her in a lot of comedy. She's not really known for comedy, but she gets a couple of pretty good laughs in this.
She was I hesitate on how to say this. She was the, and I don't know if it's just because I know her, but like she felt like the most out of place character. Like that, yeah. I was just like, what? She just seems weird here.
Yeah.
just because I'm used to seeing her in different types of roles. Like, not that she was bad or anything. It just, for a bit, honest to God, because I did not know that she was in this movie either, I thought I might be crazy and it wasn't Thandie Newton at first. Like, I was like, is that Thandie Newton? Why would she be here?
Yeah, but also, like, it's clearly her. I mean, she's got a very unique look and, and granted, she's also not speaking in her British accent, so. So that throws you off a little bit, but, she's actually pretty good in it though. She doesn't have a ton to do, in the plot, but she does get a couple of good laughs in here and there. So she's like one of the childhood friends of these. It's Paul Rudd, Jack Black, Steve Zahn, and Thandie Newton. They're all these childhood friends who made movies together when they were kids. They grew up watching Anaconda and she, they've all kind of gone their separate ways. Paul Rudd's a kind of failed actor. Jack Black, who wanted to be a director when he was growing up, is now making wedding videos. Steve Zahn, I don't know what he's doing, actually, at the beginning of the movie. We do find out that he was helping Jack Black with the wedding videos and is no longer. And then Thandie Newton, I think she says she's a lawyer or something at some point. So we never see any of that. But
I think the big thing with this movie is that, like, if you're going to see it, I feel like the reason you're going to see it is, like, Paul Rudd and Jack Black and maybe Steve Zahn or something. But, like, mostly Paul Rudd and Jack Black being funny and there's a giant snake. And so for those things,
it delivers.
It's what it is. And, and they are funny. And also I feel like the filmmakers it felt like that's what they had going in.
Yeah. We're just going to build a movie around this premise and these two guys. And that's what they did. And it's a little bit of a shoddily built building plot wise. Cause like I said, it is full of conveniences, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because you're there to laugh. And I fucking laughed my ass off through the whole movie.
Yeah. Sorry. I was looking at one thing. I felt like I remembered being that Nicolas Cage was supposed to originally be in this as well, but he is.
Oh yeah,
he is not. But anyway, I don't know how true that is. I felt like I saw that pop up somewhere, but so that's why I was trying to remember. It was like, was it always these two guys that were going to be in this movie? Was what I was curious about.
Well, it's funny. I saw some interviews with both of them recently where they were talking about it, and Paul Rudd had been helping develop it for a little while, I think. Is that what, that's what he said? And then the studio like went to like Paul Rudd saying that, oh, we're talking to Jack Black about doing this movie. It's like, oh yeah, I would love to do it with Jack Black. And that's how they got Paul Rudd involved. They did the same thing to Jack Black. They were like, oh, Paul Rudd's going to be doing this. You should come do it. So they both got, played by the studio.
That's awesome.
But honestly, half of the fun of like, the lead up to this movie has been watching Paul Rudd and Jack Black doing the press tour for it.
Yeah.
Like showing up on, you know, the Today Show and everything else. So they clearly are like buddies and they have a very similar sense of humor and they're just goofing around and having fun for a month, you know, promoting this movie. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah. You mentioned the story and there's the obvious stuff that you've already talked about, like that I think even the trailers play up. It's just like these old friends are trying to get back together and trying to relive, you know, their glory days or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make a movie, let's make Anaconda. And it's like, there's some parts of that are sweet at the beginning, like telling that story and building up to it. But it doesn't feel like there's ever really a payoff to that. Like, it feels like they kind of just like rush through that resolution.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's a very sweet sentiment. It's like, and the idea behind it is nice. It's like these guys who never really fulfilled their childhood dreams. Now they're like grown up and have families and whatever. And now we're finally going to like, we're going to do this thing that we always talk about doing when we were kids. So it's like this kind of inspirational, like you're never too old to follow your dreams kind of thing. But the movie really just uses it as sort of like a structure to build like gags around. Like it even though that is, it does sort of take that seriously. It doesn't take it that seriously. Like that whole theme of like following your dreams. I mean, obviously it's a through line through the movie, but this is not like a saccharine movie that's like hammering you over the head with that. It's almost like they were afraid of it getting too like mushy. And they dialed it back a little too much to where it doesn't land that well. So by the end, like you know that they're going to succeed in some way. So there's not really any real dramatic tension to that. So it doesn't really pay off that well.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason I brought it up is I'm like, all right, well, there was that aspect of it. They could have played up a little bit more, but they kind of just lightly cover that, you know, and just, they're not interested in making that a pivotal part of the movie. Yeah. And the same with like the snake is played for horror, but they're not going to go too far with like, I mean, there's some gore in it and,
but even less so than in the 97 one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so like never to humans, it doesn't feel like
yeah.
It feels like very little involving like the human characters.
And there's a shot or two of a character that gets killed by the snake that is a little gory, but it's also shot in a way to where it's sort of obscured, you know?
Yeah. So they don't go very far with that. It feels like they don't go very far with the sweet part of the story and they don't. And again, I think of like Tropic Thunder and like how there's a few moments where it feels like they wanted to pick at Hollywood a little bit or like movie making in general, but they don't quite.
Yeah. Like, they don't really like go for it. They don't really like go for the jugular at all. They flirt with that idea, but that's not really what they're trying to do here.
So that's kind of the thing with it. It just feels like it is funny. There's a lot of funny stuff in it. It just feels like it doesn't ever really try to do anything big, like no big swings or nothing outside of just like, let's make some people laugh and like a tame comedy kind of thing.
Which, you know what? Sometimes it's perfectly fine, I think, you know? So I do. So real quick, Gary, I want to get into a I want to get into a very short spoiler discussion before we end the episode, but I want you to give us and give our listeners a yay or nay. Would you recommend Anaconda 2025 to people?
I will say I'm like middle of the road on this. I think yay. I would lean yay. If you're interested in this movie at all, it's probably going to work for you fine.
If you like Jack Black and you like Paul Rudd and you think they're funny, then you will think this movie is funny.
Right.
Because they're both doing really good work here. I mean, Paul Rudd is much funnier than he was in like the Ghostbusters movies and stuff like that. Like, they really do let him go full on comedy in this, which he hasn't done really in a while. Because the last few things I've seen him in have been like Ghostbusters and Friendship with Tim Robinson, which was a little underwhelming, and he kind of played the straight man in that. So he gets to go full on, like, this is like the Paul Rudd from Anchorman. Like, this is that he's in that mode in this movie. Jack Black's in full on. He's not in kid movie Jack Black mode. He veers into it a little bit now and then, but he is he's very funny in this. So I would say the same thing. Like, there's nothing monumental about it. There's nothing mind-blowing about it. But if you think Paul Rudd and Jack Black and Steve Zahn, who is as funny as they are in this movie, think that they are funny, then you'll enjoy it and you'll laugh your ass off. And don't expect like any big crazy story beats or anything that are going to blow your mind. It's very it's a harmless studio comedy.
Yeah, well, so the reason, just so I'm clear with you and our audience, the reason I even sounded like I was hedging there for a second is because what I was rattling around in my brain there is the theater experience, like the theatrical, the idea of, would I tell you, you need to get off your ass and go out to the movie theater and go see this movie? Because on one hand, we did have a great time seeing it in the theater. I think it was more fun seeing it in a theater, like you talked about, instead of watching it at home on streaming. You probably would have more fun in the theater. Also, it's expensive to go to the movie theater for a lot of people, you know, for everybody really. But it's so it's just like that was the part I was trying to like weigh in my brain. Like, and as far as compared to other movies that are out in the theater right now, I guess, is where I'm at.
Before we get to that that spoiler section though, Gary, I do want to ask further viewing for this. You already mentioned Tropic Thunder, so that might be your answer, but I'm curious, like, if you were to pair this with another movie as a double feature, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would. I mean, the easy answer is Anaconda would be the other
right.
one.
Right. Well, yeah, obviously.
You'd watch Anaconda and then watch this. That seems like the perfect pairing.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
But yeah, I mean, I might would say Tropic Thunder would actually,
Has Jack Black in it and another fantastic role. And it's funny, I didn't think about that one until you mentioned it, although that is a great pick. The one that came through my mind while we were watching the movie yesterday was actually another Jack Black movie about someone trying to remake movies without any money.
This also crossed my mind.
Yeah, Be Kind Rewind, Michel Gondry, a favorite movie of mine. I'm a big fan of that movie. And that movie is a better movie than this, I think. It's got a lot more to say about nostalgia and all kinds of stuff, but it's a really wonderful movie. If you haven't seen Be Kind Rewind, do yourself a favor and go see that or rent it. And I think it would make a good double feature with this one, though.
Yep, that's a good choice, too.
And with that said, Gary, for the last couple of minutes of this podcast, we're going to get into some light spoilers. There's nothing that you can really reveal plot-wise about this movie that would really spoil your experience. But for those who want to go in completely clean, you can stop the podcast now and go see the movie. But we're going to talk for a couple minutes about spoilers. So that's your spoiler warning. That's what we got.
The part where Jack Black like masturbates in front of J-Lo.
It's very disturbing. You say that, but there is a scene where he gets pissed on. There is an extended golden shower sequence in this movie.
My favorite scene.
It might have gotten the biggest laugh out of the theater we were in. Like that scene, like, and it goes on for a while. So people were like fucking howling like during that scene. And it's very funny. the whole build up to it, the whole thing where they have to turn it into a chair because he has to sit down to pee, and like, it's pretty great. It's very funny. And another one of those things where like, there's just a little weird little plot convenience where Jack Black gets bitten by a spider, and so they have to pee on his leg, which I don't think is a thing, but they turn it into a thing, and there's no reason for it plot wise in the movie, other than we're creating a gag, and it's a very funny gag, so it's worth keeping in.
That scene and the van scene, which you mentioned earlier, and the scene with Jack Black with the pig on his back are the things that I'll like always remember. Yeah. I could see myself remembering 10 years from now. Like, I will remember those things.
Yeah. The scene with the pig on his back, which is in the trailer, that was the one that really set my wife off. Like, she was cackling at it. She was even laughing about it after the movie in the car when we were driving, about the way the pig kind of jiggles when he's running on his head. Right. That's what sent her over. And Jack Black plays it up very well. And he's like, well, that's where he drops the F-bomb, where he wakes up and goes, "What the fuck?" And it's a very funny, very well-placed "what the fuck," because you only get one fuck in a PG-13 movie. Right. And I think they use their single fuck very well in that scene. But the other thing I wanted to ask about, I know we're going to get into a couple of cameos, but the thing with Daniela Melchior, who plays this sort of, she's a native, I guess they're Brazilian, they're in Brazil, and she's got these two men after her the whole movie, and it's sort of a weird like side plot to the movie that runs into the plot of these guys trying to make Anaconda. But then there is a twist at the end, which I saw coming from a mile away, to be honest, but there's this twist at the end that she's the bad guy and that these guys are like actually some sort of police who are after her, which didn't really land very well for me at all.
No, it did not matter.
Well, it just didn't need to be there. Like, why? We don't need this whole side plot at all.
No, like, even her stealing the boat didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter that they still could have been out with their original tour guide and this
on the boat
happened.
Yeah, everything that happens in the movie could have still happened with their regular captain of that boat.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason for them to do it otherwise.
Right. It was weird. And then, yeah. And then there's the plot twist of her actually being the bad guy. Also the randomness of like where Jack Black starts becoming obsessed with her being the star. And there's that tension between him and Paul Rudd.
Which comes like, completely out of nowhere.
Like, yeah. And I was like, why did that matter?
We don't need this tension right now. Like, there's no reason for this. I mean, you could have created some tension between the two of them in some other way, but it's very unnecessary. And I think she's good in it. I mean, she's fine in the role. There's nothing wrong with her as an actress, but it's just like that character almost didn't even need to be there at all.
Yeah. It actually makes me feel bad. You just mentioning her made me feel bad that I had not mentioned Selton Mello before.
Oh, God. He's funny.
Because he's great. And I meant to say that early on, that like a surprise for me was him, because I don't know who that guy is, but I loved everything he did.
He's so funny. And like he plays it up as he's on a different level of like weirdness from anyone else in the movie. Like he is just playing it up very strange, very uncomfortable, everything he does. And they even like make a comment, they're like, "This guy's a fucking like psycho, like this guy's weird."
And he felt like a guy who you could have dropped into Tropic Thunder and he would have fit right in,
right? Yeah,
with that movie too. Like,
yeah,
like you said, like weird and uncomfortable kind of funny. Like he's he was playing a different level of something. Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I know his face, so I've seen him in stuff before, but I'm not super familiar with him. He is Brazilian, so that accent is real, even though it sounds sort of fake. it sounds like, because at first I was like, is he trying to do like the John Voight accent from the first movie? But I guess that's his real accent. So then I felt bad about it.
Yeah, it's his whole. I was disappointed when he exited the film. Like, I was just like,
yeah, but it is funny though. Like, yeah, it is funny the way that he ends.
It was weird too, because like not to go off in too many directions, but this is what I was talking about with the snake killing people. It's never like very brutal with the snake. Like you get to see him thrown into the van at one point. That's like the most gore you see on a
person. That's what I was referring to earlier. I just didn't want to like say this guy dies, but yes, that's what I meant.
But usually the people are just getting like, you get a scene of them getting wrapped up real quick or something.
Right.
That's all you see of it.
You don't get anything cool like when John Voight gets spit out in the first one or anything like that. Although Jack Black does get eaten from the head up at one point and gets pulled up into the tree. So
that's the most fun, like, quote unquote kill, I guess.
Or like jump scare. There are a couple of jump scares that work pretty well in this, but the other thing I wanted to mention in our spoiler section is we find out over the course of the movie that Paul Rudd, who has claimed to have the rights to Anaconda, which felt very like suspect anyway, because it's like he just springs it on them like it was nothing. Like he just, I've got the rights to Anaconda. So the whole movie, I'm thinking, well, that seems like very convenient that this guy who works at Lowe's was just able to buy the Anaconda rights. But then you find out later in the movie that he was lying, and you find that out because they pass another boat on the river in Brazil that is an actual like full on film crew that's filming an Anaconda sequel. Which is funny. But that leads to a cameo from Ice Cube as Ice Cube, who is one of the sole survivors of an attack from the Anaconda, who has taken out the entire film crew, taken out Eric Stoltz, not J-Lo, because she's, as he says, Jenny's from the block. She can take care of herself. And then we get a cameo from J-Lo later on in the movie.
That's true. Which, I mean, I was happy that they did that. It just felt... it was pointless, but it was, I mean, at least Ice Cube had a role, I guess.
Yeah. He comes in to do like to save the day kind of, and they keep him back in the shadows. It's a very good introduction to his character. But even like when he comes in, like with two guns blazing, shooting at a snake. And even when he was in complete shadow, I turned to Bunny. I was like, that's Ice Cube. Like, it's gotta be, because I knew it had to be somebody from the original movie, and it wasn't going to be fucking Eric Stoltz. Right. So
I thought John Voight or Ice Cube, and it makes that joke about who do you think it was going to be, John Voight?
Yeah. Which, who dies in the original movie, which I don't think Ice Cube does. He survives, right?
I'm pretty sure he lives. Yeah.
But then the like sort of mid credit stinger, J-Lo comes back and as herself, she shows up at Jack Black's house and tells him, hey, we're making a sequel to Anaconda. I saw your little fan film, your unauthorized fan film. I thought it was pretty good, and I want you to direct the next Anaconda movie, which is a fun ending, but also, like, if this movie does well, they could really play that up in the sequel to where it's like a meta sequel to where Jack Black is playing a fictional character who is directing an actual Anaconda sequel starring Jennifer Lopez in the sequel to the 2025 Anaconda.
Yeah. So, I
it's like I a Russian nesting doll of references. Yeah, I would see it. Absolutely.
Yeah. That would be fun if they decide to go back to that.
We'll see though.
I don't know. John Voight. I know that, you know, it's probably controversial to be fanboying out about John Voight, but if you're going to want to see John Voight again at any point, it feels like him doing that accent, like, I would bring him back for that movie just to,
but he gets like, eaten in the first one. He gets eaten.
Like his character somehow survives. Like they would, you could say that in the movie, like, oh,
he's
no,
missing
we're
an eye.
Back in, you know, like he cut himself out of the snake somehow. And
no, he gets regurgitated at the end of Anaconda. Right. And remember he gets eaten and then he winks at Jennifer Lopez. Yeah.
Also, maybe he is alive. See, like he's.
Yeah, maybe. And just completely very disfigured and partially digested. Also, but you know what? John Voight sucks. So
I just saw John Voight doing that accent again.
Yeah. Maybe they could have someone playing his son. Maybe they get Angelina Jolie to do it and she's playing the daughter of his character.
Or playing the son.
Or the son. I think we've about covered it, Gary, don't you?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think overall, like, the movie's a fun movie. I don't know that I would necessarily say anybody's got to rush out of their house to go see it right this minute, if I'm going to be completely honest. But I think it's fun. I think it's good.
I think it's very funny. And if you want like a good, like fun, easy laugh at the theater, I would recommend it. If you want to vote for the next movie that we're going to talk about for January, that poll is already up. I don't even know if I told you that, Gary. The poll's up for January. We're voting between the Send Help, the new Sam Raimi movie that's coming out. He's returning to his sort of Spookablast roots, which he hasn't done since Drag Me to Hell in 2008. And then we're doing 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, the sequel to 28 Years Later that came out earlier this year. And for shits and giggles, I threw The Moment, the Charlie XCX movie on there, because I'm really very curious about that movie and excited for it. So we'll see what wins. Only members of Cinema Shock Plus can vote. That is a perk that you get if you join Cinema Shock Plus at any level. You can vote. So head to cinemashock.net/plus and cast your vote. And whichever one you vote for, we're gonna talk about it in January. Any of those you're hoping wins, Gary?
I think deep down I'm hoping Sam Raimi a little bit, I'm excited that he's back, doing his thing. I wouldn't be opposed to 28, years later because I haven't seen the other one, and, the wife, she hates those movies for some reason. So I just haven't seen anything, recent with those. And so I'd like to have an excuse to watch them.
28 Years Later is fantastic, and the new one's getting really good reviews. So, and it's from Nia DaCosta, who did the Candyman remake. So I'm pretty excited for it. I'd be happy with any of them. I'm going to probably see all of them at some point in the theater. So it's just a matter of which one we talk about here on the show. If you are a member of Cinema Shock Plus, you can go vote for that right now. And I think that's it for this bonus episode, Gary, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I think that covered it.
All right, well. Then until we meet again.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening and voting. This has been fun.
We appreciate it.
And it made Justin and I go to the movies together. So that's always a plus.
It is fun. So, well, you guys know where to follow us. Cinemashock.net, cinema_shock. I'm at Justin_Bishop. He's at This Is Gary Horn, all spelled out. And until next time,
may the wings of liberty never lose a feather
and be excellent to each other.